You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to the last episode of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas before this year's Final Four in Cologne, Germany that starts on the 28th of May. And we're fortunate enough for the next hour to have someone on our podcast that'll be there with me, but he's just going to have a little bit of a tad bit better role than I will have. The big man from Barcelona who's made his way through Europe has performed great no matter where he's been. This will be his second Final Four as he also found his way there playing for the same coach that he has now but on a different team. That was Argiris Kaunas. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the crossover Mr. Brandon Davies. What's up, my man? How's the family doing? Everything good?
Hello. Yeah, everything's good. All good.
Good, man. I got to ask you the first question, man. Am I the only commentator that constantly slips up and calls you Brandon Davis?
No, I mean, that's been happening my whole career.
So. Good, man, because I've been feeling bad about myself. I'm like, man, every time like there's a fast play or an alley-oop or a dunk, I'm like, Brandon Davis. I'm like, shh, it's Davies, man.
Yeah, it's all good. I don't mind too much. My mom who gets offended a little bit.
I figured that, but that's why I capitalized her name in that part of the interview. I said, at least I'm having another chance to call you Davis for a couple more games at the end of this month. So, hey, let's get started, man. We'll talk about the Final Four later. Tell me about this super mom that you call her, Linda Kathleen Davies.
My mom's amazing. You know, I could talk about her, you know, all day and, you know, just the little things that she's done for me and continues to do for me.
You call her super mom. It's just because of just everything. Just she's been able to take care of you from day one.
Yeah. I mean, raising three kids on your own isn't easy. So, especially when one of them's like me. So I'm getting a taste of my own medicine now with my kids. You know, they act just like how I acted when I was a kid and make it kind of hard on me and mom. But
what comes around goes around, my man.
Exactly.
You know that. I love this job because I get to know you guys and learn so much about you off the court. I didn't know that you were born in Philadelphia and then 2 days later your mom adopted you and brought you to Utah. I mean, I have an adopted son. We adopted him from Ethiopia about 13. He was 13 months old. It's not like, you know, because you're adopted so young, it's not like you're really adopted, is it? It's just your family. That's all it is.
No, yeah. I mean, it's you grow up and that's the normal. You know, it's to me growing up, you know, it was kind of, I guess it was weird in a sense when people like were having kids of their own, like, oh, you're not adopted. Like it's not everyone was adopted, you know? So that was just the norm. And you just, you know, when you learn more about it, as you get older, you just kind of learn more about the love that goes into it and the importance.
It's amazing, man. It's amazing. My wife, my child's mom, now my ex-wife, brought it to me a long time ago. And I wasn't sure I was able to do it because I already had two biological children, but it's just like it's just another kid. It's your kid, you know. It's amazing the love, and it's a little bit more special also, especially when your biological ones, like you said, they're not as good as my other one. hey, I met you in Belgrade the first time, and I remember taking two things from the meeting. One is like, I'm like, damn, this guy's cool, man. I mean, this guy's just he's tight. He's a good guy. And I remember the shoes you had on, man. Like I don't even know if they were sneaks or shoes or whatever. We're at the award ceremony. And I think I came up and said something to you, man. And like a couple of weeks later, I tried to go out and buy me a pair of kicks like that. And my wife was like, you're 50 years old, man. Quit trying to be young. And now look at you with the new hairdo and everything.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember right, I think it was like some all black there. Some spikes there. Like red bottoms, I think. So it was, they're one of those shoes that you can only wear for certain events, you know? So that was definitely one of them.
Yeah. Well, I didn't go out and get the ones with the spikes on, but still, I think I wore them once and I put them away for good. Looking into your past, man, we were like all-star baseball player. I was looking at, I was like all-star tight end. He had to be something like that, but you were soccer.
Yeah, I mean, growing up when I was a kid, all my friends around me and in my neighborhood, they all played soccer. And
in
I was
Utah,
kind of,
there was, in Utah, soccer, was that big?
Yeah, I mean, at least in amongst my group of friends and everything. I mean, we all played like every sport. You know, I played 1 year of baseball, wasn't for me. 1 year of football, wasn't for me. I was playing soccer. I was like the same size as all my friends and, you know, just a little faster, a little more athletic. And then I started hitting a growth spurt. Knees started buckling. So I need to find something else that I could use my height with. And once they moved me to goalie in soccer and I was sitting there bored in the goal, and I was like, I need a new sport. So that's when my love for basketball started.
Yeah, but those goalies get paid a lot of money right now to get to
they
sit
do.
Back
I,
there and get bored.
I regret it now. Yeah, I regret it now. I wish I would have stuck with it.
And now look, how ironic is it that you're on one of the big you're playing basketball for one of the biggest football clubs in the world? How crazy is that?
Yeah, I mean it's, and then just to see the, you know, the lifestyle of, like, you know, some of the soccer players and then how much love and that the fans have for them is unbelievable here.
Well, you ain't doing so bad yourself, man. You're not doing so bad. I always ask people this question because I played, you know, baseball, basketball. I played a little bit of everything growing up. How much do you think being on a soccer pitch, how much do you think that it helped you, like, footwork-wise and ability-wise to be on the basketball court?
I think it helped a lot, especially, you know, coordination-wise and but I think that's what's important, you know, as a kid, to try multiple sports. You know, you got to find my mom, you know, didn't force me to do just one thing. She just wanted me out playing. And, you know, you build a love, you build a, you know, coordination, footwork, things like that. And even just the competitive nature of it, you know, and I think a lot of, you know, not just footwork in soccer, but like stamina, you know, you're running the whole time, you know, so. I think those were things that helped build who the athlete I am today.
And when did you make the decision? Just like, I'm done. I got to go basketball. This is because you didn't even mention basketball to me yet. You haven't even said that you played basketball. You said you played other sports.
Yeah. So I didn't really start getting into basketball until, you know, like sixth, seventh grade. I played, it was called junior jazz. But, you know, it wasn't very good. You know, I only played a little bit of minutes because I was paying to be on the team. And, you know, then as my skills developed, I started growing into my body. I started, you know, figuring things out, you know, kind of a Michael Jordan type story, like got cut from the seventh grade team, made the B team. All my best friends were on the A team. So really put in the work that summer. And, you know, things just came along after that. And each year in high school, I grew about 2 inches every year from seventh grade to 12th grade. So that's kind of when I knew things were getting serious with basketball.
I think that's a fortunate thing because I felt like that happened. I saw so many of my friends grow like a foot during the summer, you know what I mean? Or almost a half a foot or 10 inches. I did the same thing. I grew like four summers in a row. I grew like 3 inches. And I think it was fortunate because you didn't get that uncoordinated, like, you know that big guy that just like kind of like walks around and hasn't, like you said, hasn't caught up to himself yet.
Yeah, and there was a spurt where, you know, my knees were just aching, you know, for a year. You know, you get the Osgood Slaughters or whatever they're called, and just knee pain, growing pains. You know, that part was miserable, but you kind of figure it out as you go.
So you were brought up in Utah, the Church of the Latter-day Saints, and was BYU once you got recruited, were you recruited by the schools, or was BYU going to be your choice?
No, I was, when I narrowed it down, I got quite a bit of, you know, offers, and obviously a lot of the local schools, Utah State, University of Utah, but I had some offers from like Gonzaga, Cal Berkeley, and BYU were my top three. And then I just went on visits to Berkeley, went on visit to Gonzaga. And, you know, a lot of my friends were going to BYU. And it just came down to, you know, being close to mom and being able to help out with the bills and things like that. So that was ultimately my choice to go there.
A college kid being able to help out with the bills, were you working too?
Well, you know, I got a full ride scholarship, and then when you get to live at home, you get to use some of that to help out. So,
there you go.
I was fortunate, but I did also, you know, work a little bit. One of my best friends at has a family restaurant in Utah, so called Sweets Island Grill, that I always
get some pub in for Sweets Island Grill. Hey, I always talk about those 4 years of college with, man. It's they're so hard, man. They're so difficult. The practicing, the studying, the responsibilities, and then you got, I don't want to call them regular students, but the non-scholarship students that are looking at us like, man, you guys are spoiled because every now and then you get to, you know, they get to register for classes early or whatever, but nobody knows what it's like, man, to be practicing in the morning, going to class, practicing in the afternoon, going to class, traveling, having to study on the road, having to come back and take a test. It develops you into a person that is just ready for life when you leave. I mean, do you feel like that's what you went through at Utah, at BYU, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a grind, you know. I shouldn't say no one, but there's a lot of athletes who, you know, we try to have our main focus be basketball, but I mean, every major university is, you know, you're a student athlete. So they push the homework and studies and everything first. And, but I mean, there's a lot of guys who are just doing the student part just so they can play basketball, you know, like but that's what kind of makes it hard, is you can't fully invest into just basketball like people think you are, you know. You still got to do your homework most of the time too.
Yeah, I went to Niagara University, which is way on the other side of the world for you, but I'm assuming that BYU was somewhat like Niagara. They weren't letting us just walk through classes. You had to like actually study and pass.
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, mandatory like study hall. We had tutors. Yeah. We had, you know, coaches checking classes, make sure you're there, you know, and a lot of punishments for not reaching those things. So, I mean, no one wants to run extra. And I think we had some things where if anyone missed class, the whole team had to run. So it was one of those things that you got to make sure you get it done for your teammates.
We used to do that. The person that missed class used to have to sit down and watch the team run sprints. It's like it made you feel worse.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling in the world. You know, you can punish me, you know, for my stuff, but when you got teammates involved, it hits different.
Yeah, I remember the first time I had to sit down and see that. I'm like, oh man, I'll never make that mistake again. But hey, everybody goes through some tough times. You had a rough patch your sophomore season. I love to talk about people when they go through something and then come back from it. You were suspended for a violation from BYU. BYU is a tough school. I mean, it's Brigham Young University. I mean, they have their own rules. They have their own philosophies. They have their own conduct. You didn't do anything criminal. You didn't do anything. There was no NCAA violation, but you were suspended for that year. How difficult, almost what we were just talking about, how difficult is it for you to sit out? Because your team depended on you that sophomore year a pretty good amount, much more than your freshman year. How difficult was that time for you to sit out and have to serve that violation?
Yeah, I mean, that was the hardest part, you know, of my life. You know, this is, you're talking about a kid who's, you know, all I know was basketball. And, you know, like that was, you know, kind of taken away from me for, you know, my actions. And, you know, I signed something and I didn't stick to it. So that's like a lesson, you know, that'll always stick with me. And, you know, but the main part for me was just the growing up factor. You know, I knew I was a big part of the team, you know, but my teammates were nothing but encouraging to help me do what I need to do to get back or to make things right. You know, like they, as great of a season we had or would have had with me, you know, that's one thing I'll never forget, is the brotherhood of our and chemistry of our team, that, you know, they stood behind me no matter what, you know, including our coaches and staff. But you know, that was one of those times where, you know, I was out of school, I didn't have my scholarship anymore, I had to go get a job, I had to do everything I needed to within, you know, ecclesiastically, so which means like through the church and everything. So to try to do my best to get reinstated. So I had a lot of growing up to do pretty fast, you know, among the all the other things that were involved with the situation. So, but I could have turned and, you know, went to a different school and things like that. But, you know, I felt like, you know, I wanted to return and, you know, do things the right way and, you know, pick up where I left off. And I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, it was a valuable lesson that I had to learn. And you just have to face the music sometimes and when things get hard.
Man, that I hear you as Brandon Davies, but that sounds like Miss Davies coming through too, man. I think she had that speech with you too, didn't she, at that time?
My wife's incredible. You know, she knew everything that was
going on. Oh, no, I'm talking about your mom.
Oh, that was the hardest part, was having you can imagine that conversation, right. You know, going home and, you know, saying, "Mom, I'm suspended." So, I mean, that was the hardest part, to be honest, was telling her, but she had nothing but love and say, "All right, let's do what we need to do." So, she was with me every step of the way.
My favorite part is the comeback. Well, I mean, tell me about, like, you went through the whole church thing. You did everything you needed to do to come back, to get over this code of conduct failure, whatever. And you come back and you start practicing again, playing your junior, senior year, man. What's that feel as a young man? I mean, because one thing is that you're out for an injury, you know what I mean? And you got hurt. Another thing is you put it upon yourself, you know, and you come back. What's that feeling like to be back, man, and be with your teammates again and be able to go home and tell your mom, like, "I did everything I need to do and I'm back, Mom."
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the sense of, you know, you feel like you accomplished something as a man and as a person. You know, you feel it, you know, it wasn't easy. It took, you know, it was a long road. It felt like, you know, a lifetime to, you know, especially having to sit on the side and watch my teammates and, you know, just, you definitely feel where you're missed and where you could help. And, you know, and when you lose a game, you feel like it's your fault, even though you're not playing or practicing. But, just going through like that adversity. And then, you know, I never forgot a moment. I never forgot a game. I still remember losing in the Sweet 16, the Florida, you know, sitting there on the bench, you know, in tears. And, you know, but my teammates, they lost too. And they came and to me and hugged me, made sure I was good, you know. Like, but anyways, going through that, and once you're back on the court, you feel you've played with a little more chip on your shoulder, like, you know, like, you, all right, I got to be better than I was, you know, not just as a basketball player, but as a man. And you really feel like you know, did something great.
Do you appreciate the game more?
Yeah, for sure.
Away from it?
Yeah, when it can be taken away, you know, at any moment, you know, due to injury or, you know, in college, like my situation. But I think after that point, it was, you know, it was go time for me, to where I like fully invested in, like, okay, this, I'm going to do whatever I can to play this game. So if that means going to class, going to school, okay, I'll do that to play. And then on the court, I saw how my teammates were for me, like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can for my teammates, every possession, you know, every play. And I think that's kind of, I've definitely carried that with me. You know, I take a lot of pride in being that guy and being there for my teammates, even now as I continue to play.
Yeah, I think we all see that in you ever since I've first seen you play in Zalgiris. I don't think that there's any doubt about that whatsoever. But my next question is, when was the first time that you could remember in your mind where maybe you laid down and closed your eyes at night to go to sleep, or you're hooping, you know, at BYU, whatever, where it popped into your head where the NBA might have become a dream of yours, or might have become like something you were.
That was my junior year in college, like when I really had to sit down and look at my life and, like, all right, what do I want to do? And that's, I decided that I was going to be a professional. I was going to go to the NBA and play as a professional as long as I could. And, you know, I, it, that was always like a life, you know, you dream as a kid, you know, everyone wants to has those dreams or whatever, but it was really that moment, you know, in college and, you know, putting in the extra work and seeing the, you know, seeing the results of that and getting better every single year in college. And that was like, you know, like I'm a pro, I'm going to get there.
What was it a disappointment to you to go undrafted 2013?
I think initially, you know, I was one of those guys who, you know, I didn't have a huge get together, but like, you know, there was, my agent told me, you know, we spoke about some things here and there. He was really open with me. I was with BDA at the time, Bill Duffy. And we had an open conversation about, you know, if this team takes you here, you know, there's a lot of talk about maybe like a draft and stash, I think they call it, where they draft you, but stick you overseas. And then you have no control of, you know, your destiny. So I think they did things, you know, the right way. Because as soon as the draft ended, I had a deal with the Clippers. Yeah, it was, you know, unfortunate. You want that, you know, you want that party and your name called and all that. But at the end of the day, it worked out for me.
I tell everybody the same thing. I got my name called in the fourth round. That was back when there was like 13 rounds. So that doesn't even count nowadays, man.
No, but there's a lot of guys, and I still, you know, I still carry that kind of on my shoulder a little bit. There's a lot of guys who in the league who are still playing, but there's a lot of guys who were drafted who haven't played a single minute. So
right.
You can kind of look at it and see, you know, the meaning behind it.
I mean, you know how life is. There's always going to be someone doing better than you. Always going to be someone doing worse than you. You know, just exactly. keep your path. That's all that really matters.
Right.
You got caught up in the business part of the NBA, you know, where you were moved from the Clippers to the Sixers. And interesting, I mean, Philly, how cool was that? Was it cool to you, like you were born in Philadelphia originally and you went back to play there?
Yeah, it was definitely cool. Yeah, it was definitely cool. Cool experience. I had visited before. My mom has taken me back, you know, to see, you know, just to be around the area and be around, you know, the my people, so to speak. So I was there a couple times prior, and then to go back as a player, it was kind of, you know, surreal to me, you know, but you know, you kind of appreciate it more when you're older, you know, not as much right. When you're younger.
And then you got moved around and typical get released before the January 10th deadline of guaranteed contract. Same thing happened to me. The only thing my deadline when I played was December 15th. It was a month earlier. And oh, okay. I'll never forget telling you, like, don't answer the phone. Don't talk to anybody. You get I don't know. I don't know about you, but I got the call. I don't know if you got called in, but how hard was that to, like, because, you know, when I asked you about the dream before, when I talk to kids a lot now, I talk to them about the dream, but I'm always trying to make them realize that the dream is beautiful, but there's a lot of shit that goes with the dream, man.
You know,
when you're dreaming, when you're back in Provo in Utah, you laid out at night dreaming about being in the NBA. You're not worried about being traded from one team to another, not playing, sitting on the bench, and then getting cut on January 10th.
Yeah,
what's that part of the dream all about?
So the biggest thing for me was, I remember signing with the Clippers, getting there, practicing, and my first day, I walk in the gym. We have one-on-ones with the bigs. And I'm there with Blake Griffin's in the gym, DeAndre Jordan. Humphreys was there, just like summer workouts. That's where everyone goes. And it's just like dunk after dunk after dunk. And it's like you stay on defense till you get a stop. So it's like, I'm just like, oh my gosh. I remember calling my mom after that and be like, oh my gosh, this is different. They jump higher in person than they do on TV. But anyways, they were great guys. But for me, the part of the dream, you think of, you know, I get my first check from the Clippers, and I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing the taxes taken away, and I'm like calling my mom, am I reading this right? You know, that was the funniest part. Like, oh, they didn't tell me about taxes in college. They didn't tell me they're taking half.
Come on, you didn't take an accounting class in college?
No, I did, but it hits different. Yeah, I never got a real check, and at that point it hit my stomach a little bit.
Hey, I made the same call to my dad, and my dad, he was just my dad worked like four different jobs, you know what I mean? My dad, he said, son, with the amount of money you just got paid, don't bitch about paying taxes. Yeah, shut up. That's what I got told, but.
Yeah. Oh, hey, but the business side of it was, for me, it was kind of surreal because, you know, going to, from the Clippers, seeing their facilities and, you know, and then getting moved to the Sixers, and they're in the middle of the process or whatever. Yeah. And
there was a 2-year process for about 10 years.
Yeah. And I signed a 4-year non-guaranteed deal with them. So every day was a tryout for me.
Right.
And, you know, they don't tell you about that. And so I was always the 15th man who, you know, clawing to make myself worth something. Had 3 games in a row where I had, you know, really good numbers.
You dropped 20. Yeah, you dropped 20 in one game.
Yeah, I had 13, I think 15, and 20. And then Sam Hinkie calls me and says, thanks for your services. Thanks. So, but then I was supposed to start that game. I'll never forget. We were in Atlanta, and this was supposed to be my 5th game in a row starting. And they I'm going to warm up. They bring me back in. They say, you can't play tonight because the trade deadline is tomorrow. And you're being traded to Brooklyn, so I can't play. I fly with the team. We had a back-to-back to Brooklyn. I fly with the team to Brooklyn. They dropped me off at a different hotel. I'm dressed up in a Nets gear playing against Philly.
That's crazy.
So that's the business side of it.
We played against Atlanta in Sacramento, and one of the players from Atlanta, Mike McGee, they picked up right after the game. So they called me at 11 o'clock at night to tell me not to bother coming to practice tomorrow. I'm off the team. Mike McGee's on the team. It's good. It's all nuts, man. It's just so crazy. Man. You came to Europe, France, Italy, then back to France again. I'm going to try to skip over that because you don't have much time and you got to practice for the Final Four. But my boys in London, who did a lot of the research for me, you met them when you jumped down there earlier, told me that Saris convinced you to go to Kaunas in a phone call or something. But what is that true, or is that something usually that goes through an agent?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely goes through the agent, but, you know, he wanted to speak with me personally. You know, he wanted to stress that he likes players who are, you know, who are hungry and, you know, who can prove, you know, prove their worth and who are looking to get better and help the team win, you know. So, and he doesn't, at that time, you know, is in Kaunas, he doesn't bring just anyone there, you know. He goes through a process to when he's recruiting players to go there. And, you know, in my first year there, we, you know, kind of bunked heads a little bit, but, you know, as we've grown and our relationship has grown, things are, I wouldn't say easier, but, you know, we understand each other a little more. So makes life better.
You and I both got that smile. Like, we know exactly what you're talking about. I get into that in a second, but you had a great year, man. And that was a great season for the team. I always look at Zalgiris like it's everybody's favorite team. You know what I mean? You just can't help but to be a fan because, number one, it's such a class organization. Number two, it's always, everything just seems so clean and perfect. And number three is they just have, like I said, like kind of like what you have, that blue collar, that hard worker mentality. And you guys that year, I mean, went 18-12, I think, and then played Olympiakos. And I want to say you guys beat Olympiakos, but you actually dominated Olympiakos in the playoffs, man. I mean, it just had to be crazy to be there your first year with those fans and the way that city is about their basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable place to play. You know, they're not just their facilities and organization, like you said, but, you know, the fans there are incredible. You know, it feels like basketball is, you know, all they got, and they pour their heart and soul into you if you're a player. And it's, you know, unforgettable experience, you know, to be a part of that, and especially to be rolling how we were rolling and playing in front of sellout crowds every game. And a lot of our fans were traveling to our road games, so we had support everywhere. And it was just nice to see, you know, when you're in a hostile environment, you look up and you see all the green shirts, you know, right there with you. So
you had a great playoff series. You had, what, 21, I think, in game one, 20 in game two, another 18 in game three, and during that playoff run. And you get to the Final Four, and when you have a club like that, that they just die to get to a Final Four, or you know what I mean? Is it hard for you to personally enjoy that victory because you're enjoying it with everybody else around you? I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but it's like I feel like if right now you're going to the Final Four, it's not the same when Barcelona goes to the Final Four, when Zalgiris does. So you don't personally enjoy it as much. You're like, man, you're just, everybody's enjoying it all around you, and you're just like hugging everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it was, for me, one of the things that sticks to my mind the most when I think about it is just the, I think we had to win 8 in a row just to qualify for the playoffs.
That was the second year. That was the next year. Because my question to you was...
Oh, you're talking... Okay.
Yeah, my question to you was, what was more fun, going to the Final Four and beating CSKA, or actually making that 7 or 8 game run where you guys beat Real Madrid in the end of the last game of the season to get into the playoffs?
Getting to the Final Four like that, and you know, winning one of the, obviously you wanted to win 2 games, but you know, winning a game there, taking third, you know, that's, you felt like you won, like the way
it was great.
You felt like you won the championship, you know, going great, back, because it was such an accomplishment. It was like a dream, you know. It was, and then going back, and we land, and there's a parade for us. It's just unforgettable. You know, it's hard to put into words.
I didn't commentate that game, so my role was to go down there and you know, do the questions after the game, you know, in the back room. And I can just remember, I was so happy that I didn't have to commentate that game, that I felt like I was there enjoying it with you guys. I'm like, man, I look back, I'm like, is there still a championship game? Because I thought they just won the championship.
No, yeah. See, yeah. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It was an awesome experience there, man. And then what going there the first time, what was it like for you? I mean, I know it's your first time in EuroLeague, first time in Final Four. What was the preparation like? Practices more intense? Were people more focused? And
yeah, I think practices, if I remember right, it wasn't the like the intensity factor of them. It was just the more of you're thinking about everything, you know, every step of the way, you know, every screen, every little detail is heightened, and not just your offense, but especially a team like we were, Zalgiris, like we had to, like you don't have a choice but to memorize every single player's tendencies, memorize every single one of their plays, who likes to do what. You know, it's you're so focused and studying, and because you on a team like Zalgiris, anything will give you an edge, that's something that's kind of that came from our head coach. You know, his attention to detail is, and what he demands from us is kind of what pushes me to the next level as well.
All this good stuff. Even while you were in Zalgiris, I read that you had a big game, 21 points, 8 rebounds, but you had something else. You received something else that same night after the Budenos game. Right? Didn't your son pop into your life at like 1 o'clock in the morning after you balled out and got MVP of the week?
No, this was the night before.
And you still balled out.
Yeah, I was up all night. She was pushing. You didn't come until 2. Obviously, you're not going to sleep. When you have a fresh baby there, you know, you're with the excitement and everything. So,
what's his name? How do you say his name?
Kays.
Kays, oh yeah. You're like, Kays, come on, man. I got a game tomorrow.
No, yeah. It was, I guess, you know, just kind of going off that adrenaline and excitement kind of, you know, carried over into the game, you know. But I remember being dead and cramping up and ready to pass out after the game. But, you know, it's one of those games I'll never forget, and hopefully he'll remember it too.
There you go, man. All that good stuff going on in Counters, man. And now I also read that you got a phone call from Nacho Rodriguez, right? From Barcelona. And mm-hmm. you decided to pick up and leave Counters and go to Barcelona after all that good stuff. And I'm getting the fact that, like, all you got to do is make a phone call to Brandon Davies and he might just come play for you. Are you that easy to be convinced or what?
No, I mean, there's obviously a lot of things that, you know, went into that move. You know, obviously if it wasn't, you know, the best thing for my family, I could stay in, you know, Zalgiris forever. You know, I think, you know, at some point, you know, maybe even be back there. So, you know, I love that. Love that town, love that city. So
breaking news here at the crossover.
No, but it was to me, moving the move to Barcelona was, you know, the next step in, you know, my career. And I, you know, as I continue to grow as a player, you know, just trying to get better, trying to play the highest level possible.
All right, now at the crossover, we have to be a little bit honest. So, not a little bit, I have to be extremely honest. You had a good season, Corona hits, everything gets shut down, obviously. Then when did the rumors, I want to know, there always was rumors around Sardes going to Barcelona to coach. There was a couple of years where everybody thought he was going to go, he didn't go. And now you're there in the conversation we just had before about a little miscommunication between the two of you. When those rumors started that he was coming to coach in Barcelona this season, were you like, oh, no, man, or was everything cool?
No, I mean, I have a lot of, you know, respect for him. You know, we have a really good relationship, you know, and on and off the court, you know, I can honestly say. But he was a big part of helping me get to this point in my career, you know, and so there, I didn't have anything but excitement, you know, when I've heard he was possibly coming here. And this was, I had a conversation with him about coming here about before I even signed here, you know, just because he obviously knows a lot about Barcelona and everything, and gave me a lot of insight and, you know, just details like that. So.
There had to be a little bit of like, man, the practices, man, the way he yells during the game. I mean, because he's a tough coach, man. I dealt with Obradovic when I played in Madrid, and those guys can be rough sometimes, man. But I mean, they turn you into man. They make you realize that you have to work hard to be successful. That's what I think Selko did for me mostly. And but man, when you know they're coming, it's like, oh man.
Yeah, but it's for at that point in the season, you know, I mean, Pesic was, you know, he's a good coach and he's a pretty hard coach as well.
Right.
But just I kind of knew what I had coming for me with Saras coming, you know, I was at a little bit of an advantage, you know, than, you know, some of my teammates. So I was able to like drop a little knowledge on them about what to expect. But at the end of the day, it just came down to, you know, what's going to get us over this hump, like to win, you know, we want to win. And, you know, having Saras come, you know, he's a winner. And yeah, it's not at times, it's not going to be easy, but you know, with his, with his basketball mind and everything, it's, if bringing him here is going to get us that championship, then let's get it.
Well, you're almost there, man, but Tell me how nervous things were, and how, I mean, you can tell me all that stuff you want about everything was calm, everything was cool, but when you finish the season 24-10, face the eighth place team in Zenit, and you're down 1-0, and you go into overtime in game two, don't tell me things were calm, man. Come on, y'all were a little bit nervous, weren't you? Think about going back to Russia down 2-0.
No, but I mean, honestly, I mean, that's, being hit in the mouth like that is, you know, something that I think is going to help us get to where we need to get, you know. But, you know, our coaches, they tried to, you know, prepare us for this, you know, type of battle. And, you know, at the time, you know, we weren't ready. You know, we learned a lot about ourselves from that series individually and, you know, as a team. But, so you got to give them, you know, a lot of credit and, you know, especially, but honestly, without the COVID situation and everything, Zenit doesn't fall into eighth position, you know, right. Like they hit some stuff too, you know, so
But I mean, I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. It was, we needed to go through that.
But before game five, and I think it's probably at least the second time that I've seen this season that your coach officially spoke about his inability to understand that his team doesn't come into games motivated or they don't start games in the right way. Sometimes they seem unmotivated. He didn't understand it. He was pretty vocal about that before game five also. What is that? Is that a chronic thing? Is that something contagious within the locker room? Has that been straightened out?
I think we've straightened that out. I mean, like I said, I think that's one of the things we learned from this series, taking every opponent seriously, every game seriously, but him saying that, he's not just talking about, our EuroLeague games or playoff games, times and, every team has a time where they're even in their domestic leagues where they're playing mm-hmm. a team and, you can kind of be a little bit disinterested at times, but that's the message that he was trying to get to us is that, that's what championship teams do. They take every game seriously, they handle business the right way and, everyone's happy, but so it's from start to finish, you still got a job to do no matter the opponent. And so that's something that we got to keep getting better at.
You had another big playoff series. Yeah, it started out with 18. You just come to show up in the playoffs, 22 in game two and, and game three. I won't bring up game four because I don't want to talk about your stats in game four. But but you still showed up. You showed up and balled out in playoffs. You just like that moment. You just get extra motivated for that moment. It does. It's a different game when it's a playoff and it's do or die.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a lot of, I'm really good friends with a guy named Nick Cantor Medley. And, he's kind of been a mentor for me. I call him after, bad games sometimes and things like that. He was with me in Monaco. And, one thing that he told me that, that I'll never forget is just that, that's, no one remembers how you started the season. It's how you finish. So when it's playoff time, that's when it's showtime. So, it's obviously you try to play the best of your abilities all season long. And, you got to fight through adversity here and there, but really when it comes to the end of the season, that's grind time. And that's whether you're trying to get a championship or trying to get your next contract. Like that's when all eyes are on.
You're back in the Final Four now. Same coach, obviously a different team. What else is going to be different for you this time around? Are you going to approach it differently or the same mentality?
I think, honestly, it's going to just take attention to detail, because some of the things that I learned from the Final Four, and that starts with our coaches and coaching staff, they, with their scouting reports, their practices and everything like that, but hopefully, I'm not the only one in this, our type of team when everyone's playing well is when we're at our best, we're a lot better team than when just certain individuals are playing well. So, I think that's the key for us is everyone, being prepared to contribute and, playing their best game.
One thing that's different is you had another addition to the family too, right? Someone named Enzo Tweed Davies.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man. That just happened like a month ago, didn't it?
Yeah. It's he's 5 weeks, I think, today.
5 weeks old?
Yeah.
Tweed's like a small town in Galicia. I used to have a camp there. Where did you get that name from?
It's short for, my best friend, he passed away last month. His name is Tui Halenye. So it's just short for his name. So,
damn, that must have been rough then. So you named your child, the middle name was after your boy.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool, man. That's pretty cool. Hey, I always say the same thing to everybody, man. We got to kind of wrap this up. We got to finish the personality thing and then the trivia question real quick. I'll get you out of here. But every Final Four, man, you know this. I don't have to tell you. You got to play it like it's your last one, man. You never know. I have a feeling you're going to be back sometime or another. All right, my man. Good luck in that Final Four coming up. But right now, we have a couple of other things for you to finish up before we finish up this interview. One, it's a little bit of a personality quiz. We're going to talk to you a little one-on-one question and answer.
One-on-one with Joe R. Lucas.
You get a free round-trip ticket to anywhere in the world. What's your destination?
Hawaii.
Hawaii. Damn, that's mine too, man. You're the first person that said it. I'm like, why isn't anybody else talking about Hawaii? I guess they've never been there. That's why.
Yeah.
Last movie you watched or series? With three kids running around, I can't.
Yeah, Trash Truck. I don't know. It's a new kids show. I've watched that about 10 times this
trash
week.
Trash Truck. Alright, you sit down at a table to eat and you're gonna order anything from anywhere in the world. Any food. What's your go-to meal?
I'll do steak and twice baked potato.
Oh, nice. I haven't heard about twice baked potatoes in a while. I've been out in Europe for too long.
Yeah.
Who's your childhood idol?
Karl Malone.
Karl Malone, nice. Pre-game superstitions?
Home games. I always have pancakes and eggs. My wife makes them for me.
Like pre-meal or breakfast?
This is a breakfast.
Breakfast?
Before okay. Shooting around, yeah.
All right, so that's a must then, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me one game that if you can go back in time, you would love to replay it. Why?
It would have to be back in college, being able to play that Sweet 16 game, not being suspended.
Man, I kind of figured that might be the one. Yeah. This one might be easier for you too. Tell me top three EuroLeague memories.
Definitely Final Four. Then the 8 in a row we had to win to make the playoffs. And then we're about to make the third one.
I was gonna say I think you're trying to live the third one right now.
Exactly.
Any plans for when this is finally over? I know you're young, but we always need to think about it. When the game's over and you're all done and you got three kids running around, what you gonna do with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of thought about it. My wife's from California. You know, all my family's in Utah, so it's kind of, we still got to figure out where we're gonna live when we're done. We have a house in Utah, but obviously.
You know where you're gonna live. Don't try to fool me. You're gonna live in California.
Yeah, I mean, maybe somewhere in the middle, like St. George or something, so where it's always warm. We'll see.
We know who has the last word in that family.
Yeah, it's not always up to me. So.
And now for the tough one. That was the easy one because you knew all the answers. This one is where things get a little bit tougher. We got five questions of our crossover test. All five questions worth different points. 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 points. And right now, the all-out leader is your ex-teammate Marius Grigonis with 70 points. So let's see if you can beat him in the crossover test.
The crossover test.
And I think you might be able to do it by looking at these questions. You ready?
All right.
Here's number one. Who has been recently awarded the 2020-2021 Turkish Airlines EuroLeague Best Defender Trophy?
Tavares.
Bam, that's 10 points for you. Number two, which teams participated in the last Final Four? Worth 20 points.
Cesca.
1-4.
Madrid.
2-4.
Fenner.
3-4.
And Efes.
Bam. 4-4. 20 points. Up to 30. Let's go. Question number three, worth 30 points. You can put yourself 10 points behind Marius. How many Final Four appearances has Saris Jasikevičius has had? Total Final Four appearances.
Four.
And six. Two with Barcelona, two with Maccabi, and two with Panathinaikos.
Oh, yeah.
Number four, worth 40 points, and this could give you a tie at least. Which FC Barcelona player has played more minutes in EuroLeague this season?
Has played the most this season? Me?
No, man, Nick. Nick Galatas has played, yeah. Oh, I thought you had it right there. Here's number five. This is going to be a tough one. Which player has scored more points in a single Final Four game since the year 2000? So what players had scored the most points?
Let's go with 2000. Spanoulis.
Nope. Trajan Langdon in 2010 with 32 points against Partizan in a third place game. I would have went with Shane right there. But
yeah, not about that. But
hey, my man, let me get you off the practice, man. Hey, number one, I just want to thank you. I know there's a difficult time for you guys with the Final Four right around the corner with everything else going around. I want to thank you for taking out this hour and talk about you. I could have sat down and done this about another 20-30 minutes. I had so many more questions to ask you, but I know you're I know you're short on time, but I appreciate it. I'll see you in Germany unless I test positive before I leave here next week. But I'll be there commentating the game and hopefully sitting down and interviewing you and putting that mic in your face at one point or another for good news. My man, good luck. Good luck next week and go do your thing. That's all I can say. Thank you very much.
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks for having me. No problem.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.